All right, Exodus 20. We're going to try to, I don't know if we have four of the commandments left. And I don't know if we can get to all four of them, but let's pick up where we left off. And that is with the seventh command, if I remember correctly. Exodus chapter 20. All right, so the last remaining commandments, you shall not commit adultery, you shall not steal, you should not bear false witness against your neighbor, and you should not covet your neighbor's house, you should not covet your neighbor's wife, or his male servant, or his female servant, or his ox, or his donkey, or anything that is your neighbor's. So those are the four remaining commandments, and so we'll take a look at those. And the first one that we're going to deal with, of course, again, the seventh one, you shall not commit adultery. And that is a very serious command. There's very few sins that are worse than adultery. So far as, and I, you know, we often point out, I think we have in this class, that sin is sin is sin. You know, we know that. So far as the salvation of the soul is concerned, but there is a difference in sin with regard to the immediate consequences of it. And so some sin is worse than other sin with regard to that. And when you start thinking about some of the worst kinds of sin, adultery is one of them that is the worst. It would be on the top shelf of bad sins. It destroys so many things. When you stop and think of what adultery can do, it destroys communities, just society in general. It is bad for that. It destroys churches, destroys homes, marriages, of course. The ramifications of adultery are huge. And so we're not surprised when we look at the penalty for it. If you turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 22, Deuteronomy chapter 22, and again, as we have seen with all of these commands, we have to go to other places to see the penalty of it. But you'll notice here how seriously God takes adultery. Deuteronomy chapter 22, at verse 22, it says, if a man is found lying with the wife of another man, both of them shall die, the man who lay with the woman and the woman. So you shall purge the evil from Israel. And I think we pointed out last week, I can't remember who asked the question, may have been Paul, I can't remember who it was, but we you know, with regard to the penalty of these, some of these commandments, that I was pointing out that we live in a, or they lived in a theocracy, so the penalty was physical. And we don't live in that today, obviously. There's no need for that. Thank you, brother. There's no need for that because there's the so-called separation of church and state and all of that stuff now. That's not Bible language, by the way. But we understand that that's true. In the Old Testament, you remember we pointed out that everybody, that God had a nation that was his people. So a nation lived by divine law. There is no nation today on earth that makes up the people of God. And so God's people aren't governed by any law like that. So that's why the penalty is spiritual. And that's why when you stop and think about it, the penalty is worse. Is there something worse than death? Of course. What's the penalty for adultery today if you die in that sin? Eternal death. Hell. Think that's a little bit worse than just physical death? course it is. So, but the point of it is that, but what I see in this passage, though, in Deuteronomy chapter 22, is the severity. God understood the ramifications of adultery in that kind of a system where society, again, the Jewish society, it was very important. Adultery could ruin them. And so you just see this, the severity of it by the penalty. It was death. You were caught in adultery. It was God's law that you die. By the way, I probably should have started off with what adultery is. Adultery, of course, we recognize that fornication is the general term for sexual immorality. Most of your modern translations, it'll just say sexual immorality. And then adultery is a specific type of fornication. And so adultery has to do with having sexual relations with at least a dictionary would probably tell you, with someone else's spouse. And so it would probably say something. I didn't look up the technical. I didn't look up Webster on it or anything. But it'd probably say something along the lines, which would be accurate, having sexual relations with a married person, someone who's married to someone else. The only thing that I would point out, if you want to get technical about it, a better definition would be adultery basically is when you have sexual relations with someone you're not bound to, or someone who is or someone who is bound to someone else. You get that? If you have sexual relations with a person you're not bound to, or that person is bound to someone else, that's adultery. And the reason I make that distinction, I could just say someone you're not married to, or someone who is married to someone else, but that wouldn't really be accurate, because you can be married to someone, and it could be an adulterous marriage, couldn't it? Because there's a difference between being married and being bound. Remember in Romans chapter 7, turn your Bibles over there just for a second. And notice, as Paul talks about adultery, though it really isn't his main subject, as most of you know, he's really dealing with the law, but he gives us great teaching on marriage and divorce here, because he uses it as an example. But notice what he says, Romans chapter 7, verse 1, or do you not know, brothers, for I am speaking to those who know the law, that the law is binding on a person only as long as he lives. Now, he illustrates that point by saying at verse 2, for a married woman is bound by law to her husband while he lives. But if her husband dies, she is released from the law of marriage. Accordingly, she will be called an adulteress if she lives with another man while her husband is alive. I'm not crazy about the ESV's translation there. Your King James or New King James will say married. That's what he's talking about there. So again, accordingly, she will be called adulteress if she is married to a man while her husband is alive. And so he's painting a picture there of a situation where a woman, they divorce, she marries someone else. That's adultery. Who is she bound to? Her first husband. But now she's married to someone else. But that's adultery still. And that's why I give the definition that, again, adultery, if you have sexual relations with anyone you're not bound to, or if you have sexual relations with someone who is bound to someone else, that's adultery. And God takes it very, very seriously. Enough so to where in the Old Testament, under that kind of law, the penalty was death. And so when you think about adultery, it's bad for everyone. It is a selfish sin, unloving sin. Remember, love always acts in the best interest of whatever it is that is loved. And so when you commit adultery, you're demonstrating a lack of love for the spouse of the person, if that is the situation, the spouse of the person who you're having an illicit affair with, you're showing a lack of love for the very person that you're having the affair with, and in fact, you're showing a lack of love for your own self. Is it in your best interest? No. In fact, turn over, I'll get Autumn, go ahead, but let me just say, turn over to Proverbs 6 for a minute. Go ahead, Autumn. Well, if there's no one's bound to anyone, then yeah, that would be just fornication. If you're bound to someone and then you have a relation with someone else, that even though that person may not be bound, yeah, but if there's no binding at all, it's just fornication, right? Yeah, exactly right. All right, someone read Proverbs 6:32. Well, I make my way over there. 6:32. All right. Now, notice that. Now, notice the first part of that. I mean, isn't this so true? Look, he who commits adultery lacks sense. It shows you the nature of that sin. Lust can overwhelm you to the point. You might be a very smart person, but you just act in a senseless way. We see it all the time, don't we? Like, you people do things and you just, really? I mean, the things that people do, they find themselves in some kind of an adulterous relationship, an extramarital affair, whatever, and they send pictures of themselves on a cell phone to the person they're having an affair with, like, you think that might get out, maybe? It always does, doesn't it? And sometimes very smart people, senators, lawyers, sometimes preachers. I mean, just people who are, you know, intelligent, and yet it seems like they lack sense. They do things that just lust overwhelms them. And they just do the dumbest things. And really, when you stop and think about it, the whole situation is nonsensical. Like, how often, I know that maybe there are situations where nobody ever discovers anything, but the far majority of the cases, you know, this thing is not going to turn out well. It is not going to be, what's coming down the road? It's not going to end very good. It almost never does. It never does spiritually, we know. But I mean, it's almost always exposed. And so people really, if they stop and think, they know, I'm not going down this road because it just doesn't make, you know, it's bad things are going to happen. It's not in anyone's best interest. And notice the last part of that. He who does it destroys himself. That's exactly right. It's the nature of it. And so it is a sin that God despises and that certainly we need to avoid. If you turn over to Hebrews chapter 13, you know the passage. Here is the way that you avoid it. Hebrews chapter 13. And at verse 4, most of us are familiar with this verse, but notice it carefully. Hebrews 13 at verse 4. First of all, it just says, let marriage be held in honor among all. And then he goes on to say, and let the marriage bed be undefiled, for God will judge the sexual immoral and adulterous. And so again, God takes it seriously. No, you're not going to be stoned to death today. But as we said a few moments ago, the end result is condemnation from God, which of course will result in a devil's hell if you don't repent of it. And so, but look at the first part of that. Let marriage be held in honor among all. That's how you avoid adultery. You understand how sacred marriage is. And that's one of the reasons why adultery is so terrible. It attacks one of the core institutions that God has set forth. Like, what institution is greater than the home? I can think of one. What is it? That's it. The home is significant. God knew that. That's why he attached the death penalty to it. It destroys society. And so we need to understand and value marriage in a society where it is not being valued. In fact, it is being looked down upon anymore. There's not a few people who believe marriage has kind of run its course, it's old-fashioned, and we just don't need, the whole institution can go so far as they are concerned. And then you have other people who think that marriage, they claim, you know, marriage is special, but now they make up their own rules for it, including same-sex marriage. And so in this society, with those kind of behaviors and attitudes towards marriage, we need to understand marriage is honorable. And it's honorable because it was instituted by God. And that should be the primary reason, even above the love you have for your spouse. Like, I'm not devaluing that at all. That should go a long way in preventing you for any kind of extramarital affair, for sure. But when you think about what you're doing when you commit adultery, how you're offending God and how you're destroying marriage that is supposed to be upheld as honorable, and perhaps that can dissuade you from ever doing that. Like when Joseph was when Potiphar's wife was trying to have her way with Joseph, which of course would have been an adulterous relationship, why didn't he do it? It was a sin, exactly what he said, it's a sin against God. He understood that. And that needs to be in our minds, in a solid fashion. I'm not doing this, it's a sin against God. And if we have that kind of love for God and understanding of the honorable nature of marriage, that'll go a long way and helping us avoid that particular sin. And so, thou shalt not commit adultery. We need to stay as far away from that as we possibly can. And that means you take measures not to put yourself in situations where that might occur. You know, in just talking about fornication, what did Paul say we should do with regard to fornication? What did he say to the Corinthians? Flee it. Flee it. That means you don't put yourself in situations where it's so easily committed. So you flee it. And all of us should take that advice. All right, any questions, comments about that? Very serious sin. All right. And of course, we know 1 Corinthians chapter 6, verse 9. We don't have to read that now, but we know from that, as well as the passage in Hebrews, that law has been repeated in the law of Christ. So I think everybody knows that. Now, look at the next one then. You shall not steal. You know, really, all of these commandments, particularly the ones that have to do with our relationship to man, they're all meant to protect man and to keep peace. And when you think about stealing, like that might be the most common sin ever. Like when you stop and think about it. People steal all the time, don't they? And many different ways. When you think about a thief, and what do they call a thief who doesn't kill anyone? Like, you know, they don't commit any kind of violent crime. They just steal something. What do they call them? A common thief. That says it all right there. Just being stealing is common. And there, because there's a lot of ways, this thing that fell out of my Bible here is a list. I got a list, and I didn't write this list. And a bunch of different ways. Just think about all the ways you can steal. Like the very first one, by robbing a person, a store, a company, organization, or a bank. Yes, you go and rob a bank, you're a thief, right? Everybody knows that. But being a thief encompasses more than just that kind of thing, more than robbery, doesn't it? Look, all the things he mentions here, he mentioned several things, some I didn't necessarily agree with. He put a whole lot of things under stealing that I question. But a lot of these things, like loafing on the job, is that stealing? Absolutely, it is. Absolutely. Not paying your bills purposely. I'm not talking about you get yourself in a bind and you can't, but purposely not paying your bills. By the way, I don't see it on here, but I would throw filing bankruptcy in that. Personally, stop and think about that. You owe someone because of a contract you entered into, and with the signing of a name, you don't have to pay. Something not right about that. How about this? By failing to pay debts or not paying taxes. Keeping something borrowed. You'd have to do that on purpose, of course. But keeping something that you borrowed. By unjustly extending business trips at company expense. You get into this work stuff, and sometimes you know, wonder, are you a thief? How many people in the church would do these kind of things, extending business trips at company expense, or by arriving at work late or leaving work early without permission, by false or deceptive advertising? Then, of course, shoplifting, he puts. These are all different forms of stealing. By keeping an overpayment. We've talked about that. What do you do at the store? You go to the store and they give you too much money back. You give it back. Now, you know, some of these might be that's dishonest for sure. You might question if all of these things could be categorized as literally stealing. But by overcharging or price gouging. Charging unfair prices, by not paying fair and just wages. Possibly. You got to be careful when you start going down that path, really. Because if you own a business, you enter into a contract. You got to be real careful about that sort of thing. We have a Bible example of some things that he might put under the category of stealing. By not giving a full day's work on the job. I'd agree with that. By taking things from one's employer. How about that? I know of a preacher who got fired and took the computer that belonged to the church. Is he a thief? Absolutely. That wasn't his. And so... he used it all the time. Maybe he thought it felt like his, but he left, took it with him. They called him on it. He wouldn't give it back. And took some other things too. But anyway, that's, you take things from your employer. I don't see it on here, but, you ever take a towel from a hotel? Might be called a thief. By making unauthorized phone calls. I guess he's talking about on the job. By padding expense reports. Yeah, you could do that. What if I went on a gospel meeting? Most churches pay expenses. What if I went on a gospel meeting and just decided, I could use a little extra money. I spend $100 in gas. I think I'll tell them 150. Would I be stealing? Yes, absolutely. By abusing sick days. So he puts all kind of things on here. But the point of it is, when you stop and think about these things, and then, you know, we haven't even talked about, you know, people who call up and swindle people and things of that nature. Is that a common crime? That's stealing, isn't it? I mean, is there another sin that is so prevalent throughout society? And, you know, God knew that's a problem. You can't have a civilized society, everybody going around stealing all the time. And so he's protecting the property that rightly belongs to the owner, but also keeping peace. Because what happens when you discover someone stealing from you? You real happy about that? Of course not. And you can you very quickly get to the point. If you just let that sort of thing run rapidly, you see that how people would take vengeance and whatnot and just cause chaos in a society. So as the Israelites are just getting started and is setting forth these commandments, that's a pretty important commandment. I mean, it may, because it's so common among us, we might think, oh, that's not as significant as all the others, but thou shalt not steal. Very important. And today, you know, we think of and again, under the law of Christ, turn over to Ephesians chapter 4. And Paul renews that and gives us some added inspired advice. Ephesians chapter 4 and at verse 28. Ephesians 4 at verse 28. Someone read that verse. Ephesians 4, 28. All right, very good. So now, you know, Paul, again, by inspiration, he adds to that, let the thief no longer steal. So now we know. We know, yeah, the Ten Commandments been taken out of the way, nailed to the cross. No, that doesn't mean you can go out and steal. It's a part of the law of Christ. If you're a thief, steal no more. But rather, he says, let him labor, doing honest work. That's why that was on that list. When you don't do an honest day's work, when you cheat, you purposely loaf when the boss is not around. That is all a form of stealing. And so Paul says, don't do that. Instead, you put in an honest day's work. Labor with your hands. And then he gives them up. Why? So that, and this is just one reason, not the only reason, but so that he may have something to share with anyone in need. And so very profitable exhortation by Paul there. And so we understand then that that's, again, another command that we ought to observe, not because it's a part of the Ten Commandments, but because it's a part of the law of Christ. All right, let's move on to the next one. Verse 16. You shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. That's very serious. What are these commandments doing? Keeping the peace. Trying to protect. All of them do that. Again, these ones that have to do with our relationship towards man. Look at the first part of that. You shall not bear false witness. Witness. What would we call that? Lying. Think God takes lying seriously? It's amazing how seriously he takes it. Lying is something that God hates. In fact, you think of Revelation, what is it, chapter 21, verse 8? I've often said, let's just go ahead and turn over there. At Revelation 21, verse 8, I've often said you can tell the nature of a word just by the company it keeps, scripturally. You notice the different things that are listed with a particular word. For though I do that a lot with homosexuality, look at all the passages on homosexuality. And whenever it's condemned in the Bible, several other sins are condemned with it. And you just take a look at what surrounds homosexuality. And you realize that's a pretty terrible sin in the eyes of God. Just by reading the other sins he puts together with it. And, well, just do that same thing here at Revelation chapter 21 at verse 8. But as for the cowardly, the faithless, the detestable, as for murderers, for sexual sins, sorcery, idolatry, and what? And all liars, their portion will be in the lake that burns with fire and sulfur, which is the second death. Tell the word by the company it keeps. Look at all these terrible sins that he mentions here. And right there in the midst of them, all liars. Some liars. What if you just tell little, you know, the so-called white lies, whatever in the world that is. Insignificant lies. All liars. And probably the way that reads, he is, you know, for you to, you're not necessarily categorized as a liar because you have lied. Like, raise your hand if you have never, ever in your whole life lied to anybody, anytime, ever. But you don't want to be a liar. Now, I'm not belittling, again, you, one unrepented sin is going to get you in trouble. So you lie, you repent of that. You don't take that lightly. So I'm not saying that. But, when he talks about liars, he's talking about those who are constantly lying. Anybody like that in society? Anybody like that in the church? Absolutely. Why do you think it's here? All liars. God hates liars. Turn over very quickly to back over to the passage in Proverbs. And this is, you're familiar with this, Proverbs chapter 6. And you remember at verse 16, these are six things that the Lord hates. Now, we're talking about things that God hates here. Seven are an abomination to him. He says, haughty eyes. And then he says, a lying tongue. That's one of the things God hates. Now, watch. There's six things here. And that's just the first part of this eighth command, this ninth command, isn't it? So he'll get to the whole thing here down this list. We'll continue verse 17. Lying tongue, hands that shed innocent blood, a heart that devises wicked plans, feet that make haste to run to evil. Look at verse 19. A false witness who breathes out lies. How about that? So, here's an inspired passage where we're told what God hates, six things that God hates, yea, seven's abomination, and out of those seven, two are related to lying. How do you think God feels about lying? He hates it in general. It's worse when it comes in the form of false witness. When you're lying about someone falsely. And that can be something you do purposely and sinisterly. I think that's a word. Or even by accident. Like when you tell something about someone to someone else, do you think you ought to be sure that you have your facts straight? What if you don't? What are you doing? Bearing false witness. That's a big deal to God. Make sure you don't do that. And look at this. It says, it goes on, and I have to believe this is related. The rest of verse 19. Here's the seventh thing. And one who sows discord among brethren. When you bear false witness, you're sowing discord. Get out of concordance and see how many passages God talks about sowing discord among brethren. That's one of the things he hates. And so We have to be very careful about that. Very careful about lying, about false witnessing. And again, don't bear false witness. Don't do anything that's going to sow discord among brethren. It doesn't matter what it is. Does gossip do that? Yes. Have you ever heard someone say, yeah, but the thing that but what I'm telling is true, so it's not gossip. Well, you'd have a hard time proving that, number one. But even if that were true, it's still sowing discord among brethren. You got to be, God hates that. It's an abomination to him. What should you do if I say something to you I shouldn't say? If I said something to Jesse about Dale that I shouldn't say, what should he do?
Don't want to hear it.
Right. That's exactly right. Should he run and tell Dale about it? And if he does, what is he doing? He's sowing discord. Exactly what he's doing. What he should do is exactly what Jesse said he should do. Stop. Which to me, I guess I'm the one. Stop, Don. Stop that. I'm not going to listen to that. You know how they've said for years, how do you stop gossip? One, don't gossip. What's the second way? Don't listen to it. That's how you stop it. But when you take it and run with it and go, well, I got to go tell, can't wait to get on the phone and tell so-and-so that such-and-such said this, sowing discord. How does God feel about that? He hates it. Don't do that. Brethren need to behave and act right. Just act biblically. And a lot of problems can be solved, will never arise if we do what he says. But make absolutely sure you don't bear false witness, because God hates that. We'll look just briefly. We'll jump to that. We'll spend the class on that last one next week, because it's a lengthy one. It's a popular one, so we'll deal with that. Take several minutes with that. But also, you know, just think. Look up a passage that talks about who the accuser of brethren is. And think about it. I'll discuss it briefly next week. Appreciate your attention.